You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Where we discuss geek culture from the belly of the beast once a week. I'm your host, Dan. With me is...
Objection.
Why?
We do not record once a week.
No, we didn't. We did not record last week, which ended up being my last day at my old job, and I gave them 2 week notice. I stayed there a week, and at 9 p.m. last Friday, I sent them an email saying, yeah, I'm not coming back. And they were like, okay.
Good for you.
That was good. So yesterday, I started a new job. And Will and I went to the Decemberists concert, which didn't start till 9 or 10 p.m. at night.
Yep.
So I walked into work today like, I'm really tired. I'm sorry. It's my second day.
I'd feel real bad for you, but I let young people convince me I was still young enough to see Avengers at 11 p.m.
Oh, we're all old. We're so old.
Ask me when I got out.
Probably 1 something. You didn't get home till 2?
1:45.
Ouch.
At least I was in bed by 1:45. That was really good. But no, got up, went back into work, and it's my second day, so it's like, how much do you expect me to do? But apparently a lot. But it's good. Where I'm working now is much better than where I was working before. And how are you guys? Dez is tired. Will's tired.
I had to work all day.
Was Avengers good?
Yeah. I liked it better than the first one.
Good, good. And you worked at school, right?
Because
you got a job at the college.
Yeah, but I rarely have to work all day, ever.
So you had to stay out late and then work all day.
Yeah.
That was... unfortunate. I do that every day, not stay out late. So how was your day, Will? I saw you last night. How was your day? You have a good day?
Yeah. I went to work for a little while. I mean, that pretty much covers it.
Okay. Fair enough. But we're here now.
How long is a little while?
Let's not go into that.
See, here's my problem is I kind of created a show, but I literally have no excuse because yesterday was my first day at work. But if you remember from the earlier, a few minutes ago, Friday was my last day at work.
Mm-hmm.
So I had 5 days off. And I played Batman Arkham Origins for the majority of those 5 days and did not. I mean, I kind of sort of put together a show, kind of, sort of, a little bit.
What he means is we have the best show ever.
And you can catch Musings of a Geek on the Musings of a Geek podcast network.
Musings on a Geek sounds like a weird tattooing show.
It does. Danger Entertainment Network and Geek Life Radio.
We're on Danger Entertainment now?
We are on Danger Entertainment now.
Roll the bumper!
Yep. I don't have the bumper.
You wouldn't add the bumper anyways, because that requires work.
No, see, here's the thing is, Michael puts the Musings of a Geek bumper on his show.
I meant Nichols' joke of roll the bumper means you have to put the bumper where you say roll the bumper. That's the part that's work. You'd actually have to go and identify that part of the show and cut and leave a little gap and put the bumper. Like, that's work. Slapping it on the front of the episode is not too much work.
I have to listen to the episode.
There you go. You can add the bumper.
This is a Danger Entertainment podcast. DangerEntertainment.net. Danger Entertainment Podcast Network.
Cut things in. I cut things in all the time. And I cut things out all the time, really. It's usually what I'm doing. All right!
You just need to stop saying, like, you know, the personal details of old people you used to date and where they currently live. Yeah.
Tonight, before we get into topics, Dez brought two games. So we've been wanting to play some new games. We usually play some board games after we do this podcast. And Dez got me a game for Christmas, which I finally figured out how to play.
He claims he knows how to play.
I finally figured out. I don't know. I haven't played it yet. So we have that. Plus, we also have Five Tribes, which you've talked about several times.
Yes, Five Tribes.
And Council of Verona, as Will pointed out, this includes the Poison expansion.
Ooh.
And you read it. I'm not going to do justice. but I'll read it to everybody. The citizens of Verona have grown tired of the constant quarrel between the houses of Capulet and Montague. As ruler of the region, Prince Escalus has formed a council to help mediate the conflict and bring lasting peace to Verona. As William pointed out, now we're no longer being the conflict, we're resolving the conflict.
Right?
I mean, have we gotten that old that we play games where we're like, hold on, let's see if we can fix other people's problems.
Yeah,
it's not even about winning and losing. It's
you know, Dan, I have to point out that you're the only person on this podcast who's directed a Shakespeare show, and you just called them the Montagues.
I know, I did. I've been in Romeo and Juliet. I played Benvolio, which, again, if you want to be in Romeo and Juliet, Benvolio's the best, because you get the best fight in the show, and you don't die. Done and done. You get to fight Tybalt, and you don't die. No, the problem is the Mercutio fight against Tybalt is not a really good fight, because Mercutio is not, I maintain he's not a good fighter, he's just sort of like, he does whatever, whereas Tybalt is an amazing fighter, he's got that sort of discipline. Benvolio may not be the best fighter, but I always think he's better than Mercutio, because at least he's got the discipline, and yeah, he gets his ass kicked, but he don't die. The prince comes and saves you, and it's awesome.
Yeah, but I don't know about your logic about Mercutio.
I every time I've read that, I've always thought, I'm like, the Mercutio fight...
Dan, I think
it doesn't need to be short, but really needs to be one-sided.
I think no. I mean, I'm not that he loses, and I like it when they play it that he loses because he's so arrogant and playing around so much that he's not really taking the fight seriously. Yeah. But I think he has to be dangerous. He's like the only one in this group of people in a whole society of duelists who's not affiliated with anybody.
So you're saying
he's got no boys, right? He must be
so
good with the sword.
Really good.
Yeah, or else everybody would just challenge him left and right every time he opened his big mouth.
He's brawn.
He is brawn.
Yeah. Brawn.
Mercutio is brawn.
Yeah.
Brawn's gonna be the king. It's gonna happen. It's gonna be brawn.
Yeah. When you think about it, Romeo and Juliet really is the world of Game of Thrones. If brawn is Mercutio and Tywin is king and is Aeschylus.
I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it. I want to see Charles.
Because you understand, all of Tywin's problems in Game of Thrones, like the things that make him a bad person, is because people just won't acknowledge he should be in charge. If they would just accept that he should be in charge, there wouldn't be war in the kingdoms.
No, because the Lannisters run kingdom.
If anybody should be in charge, it wouldn't be a war. That's the
definition. Wouldn't say that. You tell me Joffrey would have made a good king if everybody just gone, well, he's the king.
No, you didn't say he'd be king. You just said there wouldn't be a war if everybody accepted who the king was.
Yes,
that's exactly
the point I'm making.
That's the point of Game of Thrones.
What I'm making is the point that Tywin knows how to rule. Like, he'd be a reasonably good king. I'm not saying he'd be a good guy.
No, I got in this discussion with Rihanna about Game of Thrones and how, really, the heir to Tywin Lannister should have been Tyrion, but Cersei thinks it should have been her, that's why Cersei doesn't end up that well.
The heir to Tywin Lannister is Tyrion. The only person who doesn't accept that is Tywin.
Yes, at this stage of the game, yes. However,
from the first moments we start the book, even though Jaime is not really effectively serving in the Kingsguard, he's still a member of the Kingsguard. He's not allowed to inherit.
You mean the literal heir? I mean the spiritual heir of Tywin is really Tyrion. It's not Jaime, and Cersei thinks it's her, but it's never going to be
her. That's the book. The book line, it's not going to be in the TV show that I am most upset about.
Which is?
We're
talking about
one,
Game of Thrones right now.
It's the one that the aunt makes in book 5 where people are talking about Tywin's son and they're talking about Jaime and she's talking about Tyrion. And she goes, no, I'm talking about Tywin's real son. God help us all.
Yeah. Because Tyrion will fuck
you
up.
He's going to come back and take away all your lands.
Tyrion will fuck you up. So, okay. We talked about the new season last podcast.
Yeah.
I am only one episode in. We have a lot of catching up of TV to do. I did not think that first episode was Game of Boring.
I did.
William put
it in. But I think we established when we did the episode. The big problem with that is I didn't need the recap because I just watched season 4.
True. You didn't need the recap.
I mean, it's not like I'm saying it's an awful episode. I'm just going like, if you know where everyone's at, you're just kind of like, this is just people telling you where they are.
But
They're literally telling you where I am.
But if you haven't watched it, William said it best, that it's literally just reminding us where everybody is on the map. Because you need to know that in order to go forward. Except for you don't see... Oh, you did see Sansa. You did see Sansa and Littlefinger. You didn't see Arya.
Right.
You didn't see
Arya's
Brienne.
The only one who doesn't really...
No, I think Brienne...
Oh, no, that's right. Brienne and Podrick had a scene. Had
it seems
a brief
like,
scene.
It seems like every episode she's going to get roughly 45 seconds of time.
Well, until she goes off the rails. Like right now, she's kind of off the rails from the book story.
It's going to go completely off the rails.
At some point, she's going to go like way off the like. We're going to get into the point where we're like, none of this was ever going to be in the book.
And you know what's funny is I've been recapping book five just to kind of jog my memory, and I didn't realize that there was part of book five at the end of the last season of show.
Uh-huh.
Some things happened, and I went, oh, we really are just kind of all over the place at this point.
Yes, and there's a whole storyline in part five that's getting cut out of the show entirely.
Which one? Oh, never
mind. The Ironborn one.
Okay.
What are they going to do? Introduce it in like the last episode of the season?
That there's a new.
No, that there's still an Ironborn claimant, like an idea of like that the Ironborn are going to elect a king.
Yeah. Oh.
And that person still is going to vie for the throne.
That whole thing was in book four, and that didn't even come up.
Yeah, but then there's also the guy who's off going to Valaria.
Yeah, basically, like, Theon's people decide they're going to elect a king, and there's this whole subplot about that in the books that is really fucking boring, and nobody cares.
But from a book standpoint, it's very, very important.
It's very important,
because
but
you
it's
do
really
understand
boring.
Where that goes in the books, right?
What do you mean?
Okay, so you got badass girl Ironborn effectively exiled from her land.
Yes, because she did. She got kicked out.
And you got badass, really upset bear women from the north. The women are taking over the north.
Army's
it's
full of women.
It's just going to happen. No, do you not see that happening? Right?
I mean, I do.
Bear Island's really like the only, outside of White Harbor, is the only place left in the north that really has like a national unity. And why they're really, really loyal to the Starks, but they don't know there's any Starks left.
Yeah. As far as everyone's concerned, there are no more Starks. They're all dead.
White Harbor knows that there's a Stark alive.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So you wanted to put Game of Thrones on here. Now, I haven't seen the rest of the season yet. Has it been good? Is it?
What are we thinking so far? I'm giving it a fair to middling. Yeah. It just doesn't seem to have. It's like it doesn't have a season arc. It's like a carryover season. Like they're getting through things they need to get through, but there's no like I don't know where they're building to for a season climax.
Okay. If you think of like you need to have your sort of season enemy or what have you, so far only three episodes in, it looks like, you know, it's, I don't know, the Boltons. Like it's hard to, you know, Cersei's a bad guy, but it's hard to really root against her. Like the same way that you rooted against Joffrey or what have
you.
Yeah, like eh.
Well, because that's kind of where you're at right now in the books is like a weird transitional. Book five felt very transitional, better than book four, but it felt very transitional.
Yeah, but there were a lot of start of new quests.
Oh,
right, like the White Harbor storyline, which I'm not ruining anything for Will. There's a guy in the north who has like a lot of silver, who sends an important character out to find Rickon.
Yeah, nobody's seen him.
Nobody
like
has seen Rickon forever.
But this guy apparently knows where he is, and just can't get to him. Right. So I mean, like, so you have the start of a new Stark claimant to the throne. Right. There's some things that happen in book five. This one really does feel kind of like they're just not even really trying to have a climax moment, and that's because I think you know what the climax moment of this season is, Dan. And it's not a very good climax moment.
If it's going where I think it's going, you're probably right. Okay.
Right. I'm not going to ruin it for Will, but, you know, Anne McCaffrey, that's the end of your season probably.
Yeah.
And that is like it's just not a very good climax. It's one of those ones where it's like, well, that happened. But that's like really the story only starts after that happens.
So is Game of Thrones then like sex? Because even if it's bad sex, it was still sex.
Yeah.
If it's a bad climax, it's still you still had sex, so it's good.
I will sum up my feelings about Game of Thrones this season with the fact that it's like Vikings.
I have not seen any of Vikings.
Vikings is the show I watch when Game of Thrones isn't on. It's not as good, but it kind of scratches the same itch. Does that make sense? It's kind of this. It's not as good.
All right.
Game of Thrones is just up to that level so far this season.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
since I'm only three in, I'm still waiting for something more interesting to happen right now.
Well,
Arya's just kind of hanging out in the House of Black and White, kind of doing nothing. Danny is like, I think the way one of the reviews put it is she's currently doing SimCity Marine.
Yeah.
You know, like she's learning how to be an administrator.
That sums up books three through five.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Like,
yeah, that's basically it.
You're thinking about like concepts of governance and stuff. You're like, okay,
so
whatever.
It's the Phantom Menace.
Yeah, and the only thing that's been going on in Dorne so far is nothing. So it's not really rolling much yet.
Yeah. Yeah, and also Dorne has changed to such a degree.
Yeah, I was reading about that.
That I'm not sure any of the climaxes that happen in Dorne in the books are even really appropriate for the show. I think one of the reasons I have a slightly worse response than Will is that I'm not particularly thrilled about the stories that have changed significantly from the books, with the exception of the fact that Tyrion's getting to Dany much earlier.
Okay.
Right? And the ones they're keeping roughly the same are not very good climaxes. So I have a better sense that where they're going is towards a letdown. I'm not saying that's what they'll do. For all I know, they may pull a massive, like, a massive just, like, retcon at this point and just bring Lady Stoneheart in for no reason. Just to do it. Just to have a massive, like, yes, it's out of sequence. Yes, it's not like in the books. But you know what? We want to damn
we
moment.
Don't care. We're going this way.
Yeah. So, you know, I give them credit that they usually make a good television program, but I think this season's going to disappoint me more rather than less. Put it that way.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Disappoint more rather than less. That's the word on Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. All right. I still got 10 topics left. I've added stuff. What else we got? Stuff. One. Okay. This is actually an interesting one. So this week, the NFL announced that it was no longer going to be a not-for-profit entity, which nobody really knows what that means. But here's the thing. I was doing some reading up on it, that the NFL as an entity now has to pay taxes, which is very interesting because I'm not quite sure how they're setting up their corporate structure, but apparently their taxes, if you actually look at it, would have been about $10 million last year. Mm-hmm. With the amount of revenue, it's literally a rounding error. $10 million is nothing for the NFL. And so I think you and I had this discussion last night. Is they're really just doing it for the PR?
Yeah, I just think it's funny that, like, you know, of all the things that are going on in the NFL, like the draft that's going on right now as we're talking, what Dan finds interesting is the tax story.
The tax structure. You know what the draft, let's forget about this boring tax story. Here's the answer is simple. It's the fact that no one can bitch about them not paying taxes if they pay taxes, and if they pay so little in taxes.
It over them.
Yeah, why would you care?
All of the teams pay taxes, though.
Yeah, I know, Dan, but, like, no one really cares about that. You know, Mitt Romney did that, too. He goes, you know, capital's taxed initially, so it shouldn't be taxed. Like, did anyone care? No, not even rich people.
I care.
It's boring, and it makes you look bad. It makes you look like a stingy guy who won't pay your taxes. Interesting story. I'm loving Chicago.
I don't know anything that's going on in the draft.
Roger
right now.
Goodell is getting so many more boos than normal. They're booing him every time he walks out. Yeah. Every single time. I love it.
Is he just like his hated commissioner at this point? Like, everybody just hates this guy.
Yeah, I felt like in New York they just kind of gave it to him once or twice, but they couldn't really.
No, I think they did to it for the first round. But then, like, when they got into the second, you know, and he was coming out, and they stopped when he was announcing, like, the other people who were doing the picks.
Right.
Now they're still booing Goodell, and then as soon as the other person comes on, they clap. Right? They want to let him know, we're not booing you, dude. We're booing that guy beside you. What do you think, Will? Any interesting things so far? I think that the top two teams are going to both be highly disappointed.
Yeah,
not a good quarterback year. Why did you waste a 1-2 on quarterbacks?
No, it was funny. I heard people asking, you know, they always want you to compare some new rookie to, you know, who are they like in the NFL?
Oh, God. Oh,
and so
God.
So they kept throwing out, you know.
Ask me.
Okay, so Jameis Winston.
Jamarcus Russell.
Exactly. Well, it's funny because, you know, the people they ask, they go, oh, Ben Roethlisberger or all these different people. And I'm like,
have you seen Ben run?
I'm like,
I mean, really?
To the extent that Ben Roethlisberger is a giant screw up, maybe, yeah, sort of similar. Like, they both had rape charges went through.
That's true.
But if you're, like, comparing, you know, actual quarterbacking skill, no, this is going to be bad. This is not going to go well for either team. I think Mariota has a better chance, but
Mariota has an outside chance of being kind of like Russell Wilson. But I also think Russell Wilson is always on the envelope of that hit that puts him down for, like, a season and a half.
Well, the difference is, Russell Wilson got put onto an amazing team, and
that's
Mariota
a big part of it.
Just got put onto a hopeless team.
That's true. But I think the most disappointed person in the draft has to be Amari Cooper.
Yeah, I didn't get your text. I didn't understand what that meant when you got. You
said, he's a Raider.
I don't know. They were telling me the Raiders are going to be good.
I'm not sure. Really? You know, James Jones, he's a good receiver. You have to be able to throw the ball to the receivers for you to get fantasy points from them.
Well, you know, what I was telling Dan yesterday when we were talking about your text that came in is they're sort of on the rise. Derek Carr had a pretty
good
rookie season. They've stockpiled enough early draft picks over the years now that they're, I think they may turn a corner within the next few years.
Okay.
And if you have an up-and-coming quarterback with an up-and-coming receiver, that could actually work.
Honest answer.
I got a good running back, too.
Honest answer. Amari Cooper, is he worth a 14th-round draft pick in the draft?
Oh, in our league?
Yeah.
Oh, like a late pick? He'll probably be gone before that.
Really? You think so? I don't think so. We're really deep this year with wide receivers.
Oh, no, it's true. The draft in general, there's just a ton of really, really good wide receivers out there right now. I think Kevin White will probably go
White
before,
will go first. Yeah, definitely. He might actually get the ball thrown to him from time to time. Although he's kind of, you got to watch him because the traditional place to put that number three man, you know, your new like rookie, is in the slot, and he's never lined up in the slot.
No, he's going to go in as a number two. He's going to replace the Brandon Marshall role with Alshon Jeffery.
Even then, he's on the wrong side.
Yeah, well, get the
he never played that side. That's the biggest and only complaint about him is that he always lines up on the right.
The tougher ones is that the two other big receivers who went ended up going to Miami, who already had
a bunch,
Kenny Stills and Greg Jennings, and their rookie from last year, and then another guy went to Indianapolis who's already got T.Y. Hilton and Andre Johnson and Dante Moncrief. There's just no room.
I think that really the team that won the first round is the team I can't name that comes from our nation's capital. Because
no, actually everybody panned them.
Really? That guy is just a wall.
Yeah, well, so Washington took, they had the number five pick, and they picked this big white tackle. It's probably going to be a guard from Iowa.
Really?
But it's like, if you're going to grab an offensive lineman at five, like, he needs to be a really solid left tackle for you for his career. They're like, this guy's probably a guard. And the problem was, still sitting there at number five was a pass rusher from USC who a lot of people thought was probably the best player in the entire draft. And he fell to the Jets at six.
Wow.
And I was like, it's a weird thing when the Jets are making the smart decision.
Yeah, but I still think Beasley's a better pick than that guy.
He might be all right.
The reason I say that is because regardless of which one plays better, Beasley sells. That's a good name. Am I right? Can you see your fans wanting to wear that jersey?
Maybe.
Right? It's a good name, I have to say. No, I don't think the draft was particularly interesting this year. I thought it was very...
No, they were expecting tons of trades.
The only thing I don't get, and maybe I'm just not... I wasn't paying attention enough, but why the hell did the Chargers move up two spots to get a running back? They probably could have had
last night.
At 17
like,
anyways.
We didn't understand what was going on there.
I'm sure there's a certain amount of paranoia that was involved, but I guess the rumor was that either Houston was interested in grabbing a running back to be the replacement for Arian Foster when he inevitably breaks in half, or that somebody else was going to trade into that spot.
I think that I don't think the Houston thing it makes any sense. The trade into Houston, maybe they really thought that they didn't make that move. I mean, not that we gave up anything horrible, you know, but
I'm actually
still.
Just kind of surprised San Francisco didn't keep it and take the same guy. They don't have anybody.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, no, they Carlos Hyde. I'm forgetting from last year.
That's the same
the
thing
guy who took Frank Gore's
that's
job.
The same thing as having nobody really.
Now he'll be all right, but. But yeah, so yeah, the Chargers trade away two extra draft picks to move up two spots to grab a guy who everybody thought they'd get.
Yeah, but one really isn't that important a draft pick. A fifth round next year is not
that big a deal.
Because we don't even know where the hell we'll be in the draft order, and a late round fifth round draft pick is not that great.
You know, what I thought was the strangest story from when I was watching. I get to watch this a little bit before we went out to the concert. Was Roger Goodell getting up at the number two pick and mispronouncing Marcus Mariota's name?
I didn't notice.
I'm like, I thought it was just me. Like, I thought, did I just hear that right? And then I listened to sports radio this morning, and one of the guys was just ripping the shit out of him. They kept playing the John Travolta, Adele Dazeem clip. Roger Goodell said, like, he reads it. It's, you know, like, as if you brought him a card, and he's looking at this player's name for the very first time, and he's not quite sure how to say it. Like,
yeah, and
the commissioner of the NFL, the guy just won a Heisman Trophy.
You should know.
And right after the national championship game, he was the number one quarterback on the board, right? I mean, like, it's not like this debate over him and Wilson, not Wilson, Williams.
Jameis Winston.
Is, like, has been decided for, like, 6 months, like, which one is better, right? Like, you know, right after the national championship, there was, like, a lot more heat on Mariota.
Yeah, no, I think he basically is something along the lines of, you know, they select Marcus Mariota. Or Mariotto or something like. He just like completely flipped around the vowels and screwed up. I'm like, really?
And if you're the commissioner of the NFL, much like John Travolta, you should be used to speaking in front of people and reading things. Like, but this is what you do.
There's a big difference because I don't know how they do award shows, but given how most people, how bad most people are, I'd be willing to bet they don't know what they're presenting till they get there for the rehearsal. Does that make sense?
Okay.
This kid you knew was going to be a top 10 pick for 6 months.
He should have known.
That's you know, I mean, like, yeah, come on.
Although I'm always blown away at the people like screwing up their lines at the Academy Awards. I'm like, you're professional actors. You're supposed to be the best actors. And they've given you like 2 sentences and you fuck
and you're awful at them.
That's why you need to have all award shows be hosted by Nathan Fillion. Because he's used to not learning his lines and just reading cue cards.
Well, and I honestly feel like, okay, now that we're talking about award shows, that the actors and presenters are somehow maybe told, maybe their children are being held hostage, that you have to read the cue card and the script exactly. And they sound so fake and canned.
Really? You got that impression?
Have you ever seen the Oscars?
No.
Visual effects is the magic of life.
No, that's because they don't care about those people. and they're secretly kind of upset because, frankly speaking, like, and they're really bad about it. Because here's the thing, especially the Oscars. Really, the only place where you knew Marvel had a shot at winning was in effects.
Right.
And you had Don Cheadle present something. Why don't you have Don Cheadle present that category? Presumably, he'd be really happy if Marvel won. They didn't win. But, like, that'd be a good reaction on stage. But did you see Jared Leto with the Best Supporting Actress in whatever episode?
No, I didn't. I didn't watch the.
Well, the joke was brilliant. The joke was brilliant, Dan. The joke was it was Best Supporting Actress, and he went, "Tonight's category is 4 outstanding actresses, and by California state law, Meryl Streep." And the audience burst into hysterical laughter. And Jared Leto's response, which is not on the cue card, was to go, "Oh, good. I didn't feel right about that." Right, so they're really, like, whatever you think they're doing to keep people on script, that's not the problem. The problem is a lot of these people don't have personality. Going to the Avengers snafu from last weekend, which I'm sure you heard about.
Maybe I did, maybe I didn't.
Okay, Chris, like,
yes, okay, Chris Evans, Jeremy Renner. Yeah, I heard about this. Tell the story in case people haven't.
Chris Evans and Jeremy Renner got a question from a reporter at one point asking which of the two of them Black Widow wanted to be with more, and they made a couple of jokes referring to Black Widow as a whore or a slut.
Yeah, both of us. That girl's a whore. It was very.
They have since apologized.
Yeah,
and the internet it hasn't caught up, and you don't know because you haven't seen the movie. The internet will soon forgive them because what really happened was that was a reporter almost ruining the plot of the movie to a degree, and two actors trying to cover very badly.
You know what's funny about that, though, is if that's the case, I'll forgive them. I mean, I forgive them for that to begin with because it was, you know, you're tired, you're hanging out, you guys are friends, you've been doing this forever. Like,
let's just say, Dan, that there is a love interest story for Black Widow in the movie. And these two actors felt that this reporter was getting too close to just letting that out of the bag. And it's not like you can really keep anything completely secret anymore. But the general theater-going audience is different than us nerds who look at every article about every movie we
exactly.
really want to see.
Or look at every trailer freeze frame to kind of
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I like how Robert Downey Jr. has turned into a folk hero.
Oh, Robert Downey Jr. is awesome.
No, over that one British reporter guy who thinks that it's his job just to piss off anyone he interviews. I was listening to Robert's interview on the Howard Stern show after that, and they're really treating him like a folk hero. And I'm sitting there going, no, like, I mean, it was not nice to bring that up, but, you know, at no point did he bring up anything Robert has not done.
But you know what? Robert Downey Jr. left that interview graciously. He wasn't rude. He was just like, we're not here to talk about this. Yeah. And if you're going to, and since you started this, I'm leaving. I wish you the best.
Actually, he didn't do any of those things.
That's what it sounded like when
What he did was kind of cock his head, not really understanding. Okay. And thinking very long and hard about his response. When Billy Crystal, whoever the Billy Crystal for this junket was, if you've seen America's Sweethearts,
I knew exactly what you were talking
was
about.
Was off camera as soon as they saw what was happening, went, and that's 5 minutes.
That's 5 minutes.
And that's when Robert went, okay, and got up. But it wasn't my problem with the folk hero thing is it's not, there is a folk hero in this story, and that's either Robert Downey Jr.'s handler, like his assistant, or whoever was running that press junket who just went, oh, hell no.
Yeah, we're not doing
this. We're done. Okay? I mean, and it looks, because you can only barely hear them in the background, it looks like Robert's doing it on his own. And he's don't get me wrong, I think he deserves a pat on the back.
compared to Chris Evans and Jeremy Renner, whose response to someone almost spilling the beans about something was to go, whore, slut. He behaved very professionally. But it's not so much that he made a conscious choice to get up and leave. It's as much as someone killed that interview and he got out of there before he hit the guy.
Good on Robert Downey Jr. So, all right. I got 9 more topics. 9.
I do have one complaint about Avengers.
Okay.
What on earth is up with Disney? It's a Disney movie, and there's no Star Wars trailer.
Oh, weird.
There's a Tomorrowland trailer.
Weird.
Which makes Tomorrowland look awesome. Great.
I'm going to go see it, yeah.
There's even a Jurassic World trailer that makes Jurassic World look like it might be entertaining.
Really?
Entertaining. I didn't say good.
Hmm.
There's a big difference between entertaining and good.
All right, so number 9, William rolled a number 9. This actually was on IO9 today, and I put it on here because I really can't believe the hubris.
He only had 6 topics.
Yeah, but I remembered this. I really can't believe the hubris that apparently Avatar 1 wasn't enough. We're writing Avatar 2 and 3. James Cameron has enough to split 2 and 3 into 3 movies, but then he has more ideas, so we might end up making Avatar 5. I don't care. Here's my problem. Avatar is an entertaining movie. If you just go into it as this is a fluff piece that it's not, it doesn't have a great story, it's pretty to look at, but it's an entertaining movie. Why do we need 2, 3, maybe 4, and then 5?
Dan, it won't happen.
Okay.
And the reason it won't happen is as follows. If George Lucas still had Star Wars and he came in before the press one day and he's what, like 66 now?
Yeah.
And he went, I'm doing another Star Wars trilogy. I'm writing them all, and I'm directing them all. I'd have faith he'd get done by the time he died. Why? Because when he sets his mind to do a
George
movie,
Lucas will get it done.
He gets one done every 3 years.
Yeah, he'll get it
James
done.
James Cameron gets one movie done every 9 years. That's 4 more movies. That man doesn't have that long to live.
And not that he's like in danger of dying, but 4 times 9, 36 years. He doesn't have 36 more years of life left. No.
It's very slow and deliberate. In fact, that was one of those movies
he's in
that
his would 60s
show up in magazines about like movies that, you know, went into production or like had an idea that just never happened. I remember that was one of them that got highlighted. It's, Cameron had this idea for this Avatar movie, and it's never going to happen.
And, you know, Avatar 1 was okay. I'm like, I don't necessarily know if we need more Avatar.
It was very pretty, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
I don't think we need one.
I will put it on when I'm in the mood to be like, all right, I'll just look at something pretty for a while.
I don't know where the story is.
I don't either. Like, we're fine. Like, I guess the humans are coming back to Avatar. What's the planet name?
Actually enters the Avatar body.
Unobtainium? I don't know.
The story's done.
Yeah.
Right? What did James Cameron want to do with the movie? I think it's an awful portrayal of Indianness, but what he wanted to do was suggest all the white people should have been spending the last 4 centuries trying to assimilate to Indian culture, not trying to make the Indians assimilate to white culture. That's the point he wanted to make. I don't agree with it, but
he made it,
and therefore, you just went down like 50 miles.
I did that on purpose.
But it doesn't change the fact that's the story he's trying to tell.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
That it makes his ending perfect because it is the literal assimilation of a human person into
a white man into the yes, yes.
So I don't know where the story is, unless of course his point is now to go, remember how I had this dream of a world where this happened? Well, guess what happened in the real world? And now he's just gonna like what I need. I'd much rather if he wanted to make a movie about the Indian history of what this country has done to Indians, he made it using actual Indians rather than giant blue creatures.
I feel like there is a good movie and some good stories to be told there as well. and I think we're at a point in our history and collective social consciousness that you could actually do a really good like Trail of Tears movie that is really, really harsh on Andrew Jackson.
I don't think you could do a good Trail of Tears.
Really?
No, but mostly because I just don't know that, as bad as that was, Dan, I don't know if that story has an element of drama that would allow you. Look, I'm indigenous, and my problem with that movie is that you'd be making our version of The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. Your movie has to be about more than this awful thing happened. Does that make sense? You know, I mean, like, you know, it needs to be something with some kind of story and hope. And if your point is just to go, this horrible atrocity happened, I don't think that helps anyone. You know?
Okay.
If you're just going to make a movie about people walking, they already have Lord of the Rings.
There'd be a lot more dying.
Yeah, only token characters and Sean Bean.
And token characters and Sean Bean.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, what else we got? I got eight more. I can count. D8, number 7. All right, I don't know anything about the Ex Machina movie, so Des, this is all
Ex
you.
Ex Machina.
Machina!
Well, children at home, once upon a time, there was this movie called The Beach with that person who I used to loathe. And now I can somewhat stand.
Leonardo
DiCaprio. Only back then he was Leo DiCaprio.
Leo. He was in Teen Beat.
And everyone thought it was so good in the critical press that it ended up making a celebrity of the kid who wrote that book, whose name was Alex Garland. It was his first or second book. And I think he wrote one book after that, which did not do very well. Well, now he thinks he's a filmmaker. And he has created Ex Machina, which is a movie starring Oscar Isaacs, who, after seeing this movie, I have faith can actually play Apocalypse well. It's the guy who's playing Apocalypse in Apocalypse, the X-Men movie.
That guy. I saw pictures. There are pictures of Apocalypse movie now.
Oh, yeah, but I haven't seen him in costume or anything like that. But, I mean, like, I have faith. He seemed like in the suit when they had, like, the press photos of him, like, a little small. But he spends most of this movie working out, so he's never going to be tall enough, I think, for me for Apocalypse, but at least I feel like he has some weight behind him.
All right, anyway.
But, so it's a movie about a kid whose boss, who's an eccentric guy who lives in apparently the mountains of Sweden, out by a glacier somewhere.
Okay.
Brings him to his house where he tells him he's won a contest to spend a week with him, but in reality is using him as the human component in a Turing test of his AI woman girl.
This is overly complicated.
No, not really. It's very simple. He's got an AI who's an android and female, right? The kid is the one administering the test. It's not really a real Turing test, because a real Turing test, you're supposed to be talking on the phone.
Yeah.
Or like through a speaker set so that you can't see that you're talking to a machine or you're not Grace. Talking to a machine. And you would actually like this movie a great deal.
Okay.
Dan. Because
I'm watching my kid almost fall downstairs. I'm listening.
He's going to have to fall downstairs one day. We all do it once. Anyway, or twice. Or 10 or 15 times. Dan, this movie is The Tempest. If you ate a pot-infused brownie in Act 1.
Wow. And okay, The Tempest is already a little nuts.
And by the middle of Act 3, you grew extremely paranoid. That's this movie.
All right. I might dig it. I actually, did we just have a story? Is there a trailer out yet? I don't know about this.
It's out. It's out in the movie theaters. I saw
it. Oh. I'm going to have to watch this.
It's actually quite good. Not as good as Avengers.
Which I will maybe be seeing tomorrow.
But it's good. Speaking of other movies with androids.
Avengers. Androids.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So, no, I recommend everyone go and see it, especially the Shakespeare fans. The Tempest skin is a little lighter than these products normally have. Like, it's less like he's doing The Tempest than that he pulled the characters out
from
of
Tempest
The Tempest,
yeah.
To use in his film. But Oscar Isaac totally thinks he's playing Prospero.
And I would watch that.
He's got the Prospero beard.
Cool.
He's not old enough, mind you, but like still, it's an enjoyable film. Dan will like it. There's lots of female nudity.
Yeah, that's the best part. Like I can't even lie.
Yeah.
Can't even lie. All right.
And even though it was made by Alex Garland and made by Alex Garland, the auteur.
Are we back on this again?
Written and directed by Alex Garland.
So he is an auteur. Auteur. Speaking of Avengers, and I did not know this. This was actually something you brought up to me, William, that AMC theaters in preparation for Avengers Age of Ultron did a marathon where you could watch all 11 Avengers movies, starting with Iron Man, going all the way through and coming up to Avengers Age of Ultron. They were going to do it in a row. It was $70, I think you said.
$70, 11 movies.
11 movies, 27 hours.
Does that include the new one?
Yeah. No.
Because I'm at 10, and I have a...
Yeah,
I have
maybe a, it included a new
I one. Have a massive flaw with their plan. Because at 10, I gotta watch the Eric Bana Hulk again.
No, you've got Iron Man, Incredible Hulk,
three Iron Mans,
Iron Man 2,
two Hulks,
one
two Captain America.
No. One Hulk. Because I don't think they're counting the original Hulk. So I think it's three Iron Men, two Thors. That's makes five. Two Captain Americas seven. Makes seven.
Avengers makes eight.
Why am I drawing a blank? Guardians of the Galaxy makes nine. Avengers: Age of Ultron makes 10.
Jeremy Renner have his
no.
movie?
No, maybe it's only 10 movies.
No, he said it was 11 movies. If it was 11 movies, then you have to sit through Eric Bana's Hulk again. Maybe they just wanted to put that in so everyone would have a chance to go home and sleep for 2 hours. Or just stay in their chairs and sleep for 2 hours.
All right, we're going to look it up.
Yeah, I'm looking right now.
All right.
I'm having trouble zooming in close enough to see what's going on here.
They called it the Ultimate Avengers Marathon.
This is great radio, guys.
We're looking. This is what we're doing.
All right, so I see three Iron Men. I see Hulk. I see Avengers.
Okay.
I see Thor. I see two Captain Americas, two Thors, and Guardians of the Galaxy. And then
yeah,
the Avengers.
Yeah, so basically, it started at 6 p.m. with Iron Man, 8:25 Incredible Hulk, 10:35 Iron Man 2, 1 a.m. Thor, 3:10 a.m. Captain America, the first Avenger, 5:30 a.m. is when we get to the Avengers, 8:48 a.m. was Iron Man 3, 11:15 was Thor, 1:45 p.m. was Captain America 2, 4:20 p.m. Guardians of the Galaxy, and then they did it 7 p.m. Thursday night, Avengers Age of Ultron. So it is 11 movies counting Avengers Age of Ultron.
It's still incomplete.
No, what are you?
It doesn't have the S.H.I.E.L.D. tie-in episodes.
There's all... Okay.
You at least have the tie-in episodes. Not the whole shows, just the tie-in episodes.
But here's the problem with the S.H.I.E.L.D. tie-in episodes. After Winter Soldier, the rest of that season was technically a tie-in episode.
I know.
So there was like three more episodes, and then I think this week's S.H.I.E.L.D., which I'm going to watch before we go see it, is a tie-in episode.
I haven't seen it.
And I think next week's episode is going to finish up the season.
Yeah. Not the season. They've got like four more episodes.
Okay. I thought we were done.
No,
I know that Arrow and Flash.
No.
I've got like four more episodes.
Three more.
All right.
I think 24 episode seasons. But this last week's episode was episode 19.
And they've announced that AMC will do the same thing for the Star Wars Force Awakens.
But here's the thing.
Will they be the 3D prints for 1 through 3?
I just got this far. I haven't gotten into the details of which version.
I would watch... Now, granted, I don't know if my wife will let me go, but I would go and watch 6 Star Wars movies. I feel like 6 Star Wars movies is doable. 11 Avengers movies, I think, is getting to be a bit much.
Yeah, so a lot of people they were interviewing were people who had gone outside basically to get out for a little while, so that in particular, the people they were talking to had left during Iron Man 3 because they thought that one sucked the most.
So Iron Man 3 was the worst. Anyway, what were we going to say?
I think you might have better luck getting your wife to do the Avengers thing than the Star Wars.
I do, too. I honestly do, too.
Mark Hamill is no longer dreamy. B, he was only dreamy for one movie.
And then he got into a car accident. Mark Hamill got into a motorcycle accident.
Oh, my God. How long has it been?
God, it's been forever. Des, you brought it back. Uh-huh.
And the one thing you can guarantee Marla will give you is at least one scene of an Avenger with his shirt off.
Dreamy abs. So, all right. Yeah, I think it's cool that AMC is doing this, but I'm wondering if we're now getting to the out of control point with 11 different movies.
Quote from somebody about how they're now in the 10th movie of 11. It does not smell pleasant in there.
Well, and here's my problem. Like, okay, so when we get to Infinity War, are we going to do it again? With Ant-Man and it's my son and Uncle Doke. But what are you guys doing? No, nothing.
No.
Looking for Shelly.
We'll have to start cutting films out.
See, I think we will too.
To be honest, I think they already should have been there. I don't think Incredible Hulk should be in there.
But Incredible Hulk is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I like Incredible Hulk, but when you're doing like a run up to the Avengers,
yeah,
it doesn't fit.
Why?
Because A, it's Ed Norton as the Hulk, which is not the world's biggest deal, but. The Mark Ruffalo Hulk really isn't like the continuation of that Hulk. Does that make sense? He's not like really ultra paranoid. I mean, it'd be one thing if they were playing it like he's supposed to be the same character. He's just a new actor. It's more like a Batman transition. It's a completely different kind of take on it. It's just not as big a difference between, like, say, Banna and Ed Norton.
I feel like I need to watch the original Avengers movie again.
Yeah,
I feel like I need to do that tonight. Maybe
yeah,
after
you really should.
Leave.
I mean, like, but like it's the truth is that one can be cut out because it's part of the Marvel universe. I don't have a problem with it, but it doesn't really fit the Avengers.
All right, let me ask you this:
just like I think you can cut Guardians of the Galaxy. It really doesn't fit the Avengers.
No, it doesn't. Let me ask you this. Okay, so in the no spoilers, in the original Avengers movie, we already saw a little bit of, you know, the Tony Steve Rogers butting heads, the put on the suit moment. Mm-hmm. Is there more of that in this a little bit?
I'm not going to lie to you. There is obviously tension put intentionally into the script to,
because we're setting up Civil War.
Yeah, to set up Civil War, but also just because of where we are in the movies, Dan. What you know from the trailer, without spoiling anything, you know that Tony, whether intentionally or inadvertently, is the one who creates Ultron.
Yes, which is very different than
given where Cap was at the end of Winter Soldier. How do you think Cap feels about the idea of someone making a large unilateral choice without consulting anyone?
Yeah.
To supposedly protect the world,
which is interesting, the way they're going about that. I think. Yeah. I think it's gonna end up being a really good story. But now, what all of these movies are starting to be, instead of being standalone movies for their characters,
yeah,
the sequels of, like, you know, the Thor 2, the, you know, Cap 3, they're all sort of,
well, they're all
prequels to the next Avengers movie.
They've all gone into comic land.
Yes.
And that's fine. And they've done it in a good way. But, like, without spoiling things, in the party scene, Falcon is there.
Oh. Really?
Yeah. He's okay. Not in the movie. But it's like a comic book. Tony's having a party at Avengers Tower. Obviously, Falcon is going to show up. Because how many friends does Steve Rogers have?
Like, one.
Right? And then at the end of the movie, we know certain characters are intentionally leaving the movie. Like, they're leaving the roster of the team. Or they're dying. We know that already. Marvel's told us that already.
Yeah, we exactly.
The final images of this movie, Dan, are Steve talking about how these new guys, they need a lot of work. And then it almost has like the roster moment for when they relaunch your Avengers title or your Justice League title.
These are the new guys. Yeah, like when in the early 90s when we relaunched Justice League with a whole brand new team. Mm-hmm. Before that, there was that issue of, this is the new Justice League. Yes. Forget Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. This is who your Justice League is. And I remember being young and going, this is stupid. And it ended up going into Doomsday, which was great. But, I don't mean to imply
that the team they have for Infinity War is like a B-list team.
No.
They have those comic booky style moments.
No, I feel like it's going to be Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, Vision, Cap as Bucky, maybe. I'm trying to think who else could possibly. Probably Spider-Man. You're probably going to have Spider-Man in there. All right.
Well, as of Avengers 2, it is not Cap as Bucky.
It'll be Falcon as Cap?
No, Falcon? As of Avengers 2, Steve is still Cap.
But, in Avengers 3.
Avengers 2.
He actually came out and said that for Avengers 3 part 1 and part 2 he was involved in that, and it was going to be a very long shoot, so I don't know if he's going to
be the Cap in that story. It's quite possible the events of Civil War
make him no longer Captain America.
Yes, but at the end of Avengers 2 he's the only like big gun left. Does that make sense? Because Thor goes off to fight Ragnarok.
Yes, exactly.
And Robert Downey Jr. goes to Overpriced Land.
Yes. My son is screaming, probably because we're hair washing tonight. Oh. He does not like getting his hair washed.
He doesn't have any hair.
It's the saddest thing ever because he loves the bath, and he'll like play in the bath, and I'm playing with all my toys in the bath, and then it's like, sorry, kid. And the second you start shampooing his hair, you get screaming child. It is the weirdest thing ever. And then he tries to crawl out of the bathtub, and I'm like, you can't do that. You're not. What
is this on your list tonight?
I had it, and then I took it off because I feel like I'm the only person who cares about that. Michael Fassbender is going to be start filming Assassin's Creed, the movie, in September.
Why would you think that that's the only one excited about that?
Because I love Assassin's Creed, and you guys have been like,
That article right there takes that movie from being a horribly bad joke to a probably not so great action movie that might be quite enjoyable.
Oh, I think it's going to be quite enjoyable because here's the thing. Fassbender loves those games like I love those games. I don't have his money or Hollywood cadre to, you know.
I think I may be the only person in the world who's excited about The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, my God. I want to see that. That is going to be amazing.
But, like, I don't expect it to be, like, good, like a good movie. Right, like I'd go to someone and say, like, have you seen The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
No, it's going to be fun.
It's Citizen Kane. But I'll probably enjoy the one time
I see it.
It's
going to be a fun action movie. It's, you know, the TV show Man from U.N.C.L.E.? Guy Ritchie is doing sort of a movie version of it, and it's got Michael Fassbender and Henry Cavill as... Henry Cavill plays the American, and Michael Fassbender plays the Russian, and I can't think of their names right now. And it looks like a fun action movie. That's it. And it's Guy Ritchie, and so it's going to have the Guy Ritchie-isms, which just kind of make it fun.
Yeah.
But I saw that today. Michael Fassbender's being very coy. Am I playing Desmond Miles? Am I not? I don't know. And I'm like, dude, it basically, even if you create a brand new character, it's going to be fine.
There's one white guy in the movie who gets to be the star.
Honestly,
you're playing him. I don't know what his name
honestly, I think he's going to end up playing Ezio Auditore. Because Ezio is the favorite character of the entire Assassin's Creed.
I'm saying his name doesn't matter. Does that make sense?
No.
It doesn't matter which of the various characters who go into the assassin he plays. That's really the only good role in an Assassin's Creed movie.
The assassin.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's playing the assassin. Yeah, he is playing the assassin.
It's kind of like if we were doing a random spy movie that didn't have like a property like James Bond or something like that, and someone was in it and they were being coy. Who am I really playing? It doesn't matter, dude. You're playing the spy.
The spy, yes, exactly.
It's that kind of thing.
Exactly. I really don't have anything else that's good. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
I want to talk about Shaft.
I mean, literally, this is what I've got left.
I want to talk about Shaft.
I've got the Men in Black 21 Jump Street crossover.
What about the other 21 Jump Street story?
I mean, I didn't see them. Does that make any sense?
I have no idea how that works. I have no clue. And maybe it's going to be like so far out of left field, it will be brilliant. It will be cinema history.
Yes.
I don't know.
What about the other 21 Jump Street story that's actually good?
Which is?
The ones where Jonah apparently went, that dude over there who's making a female-led Ghostbusters, that's really stupid.
We're going to do a female 21 Jump Street.
There's no reason we can't just cast two women and do 21 Jump Street. Yeah! Right? You know what I mean?
Like, I read that too. It's
actually
really
a good...
Like, is this the new things? Like, oh, we could just remake things, but we'll have women in all the main roles instead.
No,
like,
I'm actually...
Why is that a thing?
I'm actually looking forward to it if you actually use Dakota Johnson. I don't know about the other girl. I felt like she was chosen for 21 Jump Street based on how annoying she could be in a very limited window. So I'm not sure I'd want to watch her in a whole movie. The
African-American
girl that's in that
yeah,
first movie.
Yeah, fair enough.
But Dakota Johnson has done a couple sitcoms. She's really funny. I could see her pulling off an action comedy. But I think that's a much better idea than a female-led Ghostbusters, where what you're telling me is that my love of Ghostbusters isn't the fact that it's filled with the best comic minds of the 1980s. It isn't that the characters are enjoyable. It's the fact that people fight ghosts. See, that's what really bothered me about the female-led.
You might have won the episode title this week, my friend.
It was the Marshmallow Man and Slimer.
The fact that people fight ghosts.
No, because they're not even using the Marshmallow Man. It'd be one thing if, like, it was all like, I would go see that movie where it was like a Pixels version of Ghostbusters, and like Tina Fey was one of them, where it was just like all this ridiculous stuff was coming and bothering Tina Fey, and her response is always like, "What the hell is this?" Like, I'd see that movie, but that's not what they're making. They're just like, people like people who fight ghosts. I'm like, well, that's not why I liked Ghostbusters.
Yes, this man has no penis.
That's why I like Ghostbusters.
What else I got? Stephen Amell.
I like Zool.
Zool.
Who doesn't love Zool?
I like Zool too.
Who doesn't love Zool? You know who else I love? Vigo.
Vigo?
Who's Vigo? You're like the buzzing of flies to him.
Why am I covered in goo?
Why am I covered? It had the biscuit in it. Come on. Ghostbusters 2 was great.
That's who's good in Ghostbusters 2, not Vigo.
No, but Vigo's not good.
Would you like to see my Vigo impression?
No. You want what's the actor's name? Nichols.
Peter McNichols.
Peter McNichols. Yeah. He's Vigo. You are like the buzzing of fly. Why am I dripping Visgo? He was brilliant.
When I saw him in LA, I'm like, wait, is that guy?
What?
Am I having the bad breath?
Yes. Yes, the Upper West Side.
He's hitting on her.
Yes.
He was great. He was great in that movie.
But like, that's that idea. That's what I liked about Ghostbusters, the fact that they fight. At least with 21 Jump Street, there is a concept which does not need to be about men. Right? That's already established, that you're not just pulling out of a hat from the 1980s.
What concept is this?
21 Jump Street.
Oh,
they've
yeah.
They've made two movies and made a ton of money. Right? Like, I mean, they're that's a sequel that stars women. Not a, I just grabbed a property from the 1980s and I'm just throwing women in it.
Well, we had this discussion. I would love to see women-centric comedies or like even funny like Ghostbusters like women-centric comedies. Write a new one.
Yeah.
Write a new one. I will go see it. If it's funny, I will go see it because I would love to see good women-centric comedies.
You know what the real problem is with women-centric comedies? At least this is my opinion, and I may be wrong. But I think that the people they're hiring, the female comedians they're hiring on a lot of these movies, say like Melissa McCarthy,
okay,
are very well liked by women. But I'll bet there's a lot of people out there like me who like I don't have a problem with Melissa McCarthy making movies. I just don't want to see them because I don't like her humor.
No, you're not.
I'm just. I don't find her funny. It's like watching a Kevin James movie for me.
She's a lot funnier than Amy fucking Poehler.
I don't disagree, but they're both, I don't know that either one could be more or less funny than the other. They're both people I don't laugh at. But the point I'm making is that it's like they're picking the Kevin James or the Amy Poehlers, you know what I'm saying? They're picking people who, women may find very funny.
Because what?
Kristen Wiig. It's also never funny.
Here's the thing, though. There is, again, as you said, it's the two broke girls, two and a half men theory that they do probably really well in middle America.
Right.
And so, you know, Melissa McCarthy, I find her to be so funny. Your average person who consuming media like we are is going to love her.
That's not my point, Dan. The point I'm making is that, look, if they're talking about, like, I'm not saying Melissa McCarthy doesn't make money. She makes money. They keep making movies. That's fine. But they want to look at Melissa McCarthy and say, oh, well, you know, there's still this disparity between male and female movies because Hollywood doesn't like making women-centric movies. No, it's because you keep casting these people who do Adam Sandler numbers.
Yeah.
If you want a really successful female-led comedy, go out and find your female Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, like, find someone.
But
who
find
both
someone
sex is really like.
Hey, but who's so, but who's not Eddie Murphy? Who's so different?
No, I don't.
From,
I don't mean copy it.
No.
Literally,
find that female whose humor is so different and so raw and so original that she transcends gender, and we want to watch her.
Yes, and then when that person's making movies that make like $500 million, you'll start seeing more female-led movies.
Of course you will.
But if you keep bringing people who make $120 million when you're spending $60 million on the movie, you're going to be hesitant because the film industry is the only place on the earth where they go, we're going to double our money? That's not enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, Bridesmaids did really well because we hadn't seen that type of movie with a woman cast before. It did really well.
It did really well because most of the people in that movie were dirt cheap. The problem is a lot of these people are getting priced out, Dan, because you know the rule of Hollywood, right? You're the lead.
I'm the lead.
You get paid a number.
Yes, I do.
You come back to make another movie, they got to pay you more money.
Yes, they
do. And it goes on and on and on
until I'm Robert Downey Jr.
Until you're Sandra Bullock, and you can only work for yourself because none of your movies make enough money for the studio to pay for you.
You know what? I was going to give you the whole they're cheap and look at you weirdly. Oh, no. That entire movie mm-hmm. was made for $32.5 million.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
That's nothing.
It made $288 million. That's nothing.
It was actually made for $12 million because $20 million is their ad buy.
Yeah. It's literally all of those actresses, they got dirt cheap.
Yeah.
It made a shit ton. And granted, Bridesmaids, not a bad movie.
No, not at all. But it's not an ongoing strategy.
But it's not going to be the movie that's going to catapult.
We're going to redesign the wheel or reinvent the wheel every time by finding completely new people to use for every movie. I mean, like, you think about this, and then you look at articles like the Joss Whedon article that came out recently.
I read that one.
The fact that you don't really realize it until Joss Whedon points it out. How is Marvel managing to make these movies with people like Robert Downey Jr., who is literally just taking all of the money from Marvel because of his contract, right? You make the movie profitable, by going out and casting people who've done like a lot of producing and really know how to direct but have never really directed before because they get paid nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, the fact that Joss Whedon made more money off of Dr. Horrible, which technically, I hate to say this, you're not supposed to have made money off of that. Stop telling people you made money off of it. Or you're going to have to pay fines, dude.
Well, here's the other thing with Joss Whedon, though. I'm wondering if his contract was set up in such a way that he didn't get paid for directing the Avengers. It was part of his overall Marvel deal.
No.
Move that cost somewhere else.
Because the deal came after.
Yeah, what? Yeah, but I mean, it for Avengers 2. I'm talking about for Avengers 2.
Oh, no, I don't know about that. I don't know
For the first one, I think you're probably right. But for the second one...
I know that he got a pay increase for Avengers 2 based on the fact that they signed him on as, like, CEO or Chief Creative Officer.
But my point being is that if Avengers is a project...
Yeah.
And you've got your chief creative officer directing that project for Marvel Entertainment.
Damn, they don't care.
You don't put that salary in your project. That salary is going somewhere else. So I'm wondering if they're doing that creative accounting.
At this point, they don't care. Do you know why they don't care?
Why don't they care?
Because they paid for their budget before they opened.
Yeah. They.
I'm not so sure that's a wise idea, but I think I understand the logic. And the logic, I think, is as follows, is that the pirating of that movie that goes on in the U.S. isn't people watching the movie. It's people rewatching the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas in the Chinese and the Russian markets and those other markets, there's people out there who are perfectly willing to see a bad copy and just go, that was okay.
Yeah, no, I'll go to the drive, because we'll probably go to the drive-in to see it tomorrow. I'll go to the drive-in, see the Avengers. It won't be in the theater, it won't be great, but I'm going to take the kid, I'm going to take the wife, we're going to go see Avengers at the drive-in. I will download that, maybe, allegedly, and rewatch a shitty copy because I've already seen it once.
I can't wait until the someone comes and actually punishes someone on this podcast for admitting such behavior.
I haven't admitted anything. I'm just saying it's something I could do.
It's entertainment. You should not take any of anything says something that actually happened.
He's
or
my
will
lawyer.
Happen.
Lawyer. I just
he's
lawyer.
Not your lawyer.
He's my lawyer.
He can't be your lawyer.
He can be my lawyer.
No, he can't.
Sure, he can.
Is your contract written so you can take private clients? I don't think so.
I'm everybody's lawyer.
He's the people's lawyer, Desmond.
Are you everybody's lawyer for the purposes of civil disputes?
No.
He's the people's lawyer. All right. The rest of the shit I have sucks. Stephen Amell is Casey Jones.
I want to talk about Shaft.
What is?
Do you actually want to talk about Shaft?
Yes.
Have you not seen the Will Smith costume from Suicide Squad?
All right, here's my problem.
Look on your phone machine and talk about it.
I was very, very complimentary to Batman v Superman. Everything I have seen about Suicide Squad leads me to believe that it is either going to be amazing or possibly the thing that will destroy DC Cinematic Universe.
No.
I can't decide which it's going to be.
Let me tell you the problem with Suicide Squad. Is it's everything, every person in the whole world has been yelling at DC for about 5 years.
What do you mean?
Go out and copy Marvel. And what DC has chosen to do is go out and copy Marvel with the one book in the DC universe where you can't just copy Marvel. They're making an action comedy out of a book that's about people who, if they don't go out and kill other people, their bosses blow up their heads. And they're making an action comedy in which Will Smith is supposed to be a super amazing assassin guy.
We don't know.
Who walks around Los Angeles dressed like a red shaft.
Yeah, the guy on the right, that's a cosplayer. They figured out that that's not a real person. Right. That's somebody in costume. But that's his
costume.
That might be the Floyd Lawton Will Smith Deadshot costume. Here's the thing. I don't know if it's going to be an action comedy. I don't know that. But based on everything I've seen about Suicide Squad, I feel like they're like, it's Suicide Squad. It's in your face. This is the Joker. Here's Will Smith. And I'm like, guys, this is, as you said, this is not a funny, happy, in-your-face group of people.
No, it's not.
Arrow is handling Argus and Suicide Squad very well.
Yes, you know what should be an action comedy?
What's that?
Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's supposed to be adventure. Like, so it's kind of like they got a lot of their properties reversed. What they didn't understand is that what they did with the Dark Knight trilogy works because it's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the only book in the DC universe you can take that dark and have it be good.
And Nolan understood that.
Yeah.
I think. Zack Snyder, I see, I like Man of Steel, but I did like the color correction. That, did you see the color correction?
I saw the color
correction. I liked that. And I'm like, you know what? The color correction could, that would be good. I'd watch that movie. I don't know what it would do for me, but at least it was good enough that I would watch. They basically put color back into the Man of Steel movie. So it was
they made the colors look like a Superman movie.
Bright and, you know, vibrant. But yeah, you're right.
They made the movie happy.
Suicide Squad, your point being, Superman shouldn't be sad. Suicide Squad should not be happy.
They should be sad.
Yes.
Yes. So they picked the one book they can't. Like, if this was like a Batgirl movie, and it's like, we're doing action comedy, I'd be like, okay, I'm in to see it.
Yeah, I'll see a Batgirl action comedy. That'll be funny.
I was going to see it anyways as part of my job, but you know. What I think DC doesn't get is their model's different than Marvel. Marvel wants you to go and see their movies a lot. So they make them funny. And I don't think people really realize how brilliant that is.
No, because people want to laugh.
It's not that. I've seen Avengers, Dan. I enjoyed Avengers. I've seen 55% of Avengers.
Why?
Because for the other 45%, I couldn't hear the dialogue.
Ah, fair enough.
Because I was laughing too hard. So at least you got me for two. And then after the second one, when I finally see all the depth of the story, I'm already going to be quoting the lines from Avengers 2, which means I'll see it a third time with the people who haven't seen it yet to just let them know how stupid they are because they don't know the line yet. No, I mean, like, they understand.
I've been in that situation with you.
DC's model is, here's what we do. We're so desperate for people who aren't comic book fans. We're afraid to lose the comic book fans. So why don't we make all the properties as far from comics as we can? Because I guarantee you, we'll get the comic fans at least once so they can bitch about the movie, and we'll get people from the mainstream audience. And that's why they make $400 million, $500 million. They don't get the repeat views that Marvel movies get.
I'm saying they're
not. It's not like they're less successful with that first-run audience. It's that no one's seeing the movie again.
Yes. I like what they've done with Man of Steel and what they seem to be doing with Batman v Superman in the idea of that DC characters are gods pretending to be human versus Marvel humans pretending to be gods. I like that. There is a deep connection, troubled story that can happen. Here's the thing. That is good for one viewing.
Yeah. Like, here's my response.
And I'll watch Man of Steel a bunch of times, but not everyone else will.
Here's my response to that. You really liked Man of Steel.
I did.
How many tickets did you buy?
One.
So you, who
two,
really
well,
liked...
Well, two, if you count Rihanna.
No, I'm saying you, who liked
personally,
Man of Steel,
one.
You saw it once.
Once.
Dan, when are you seeing Avengers again?
Tomorrow.
If you don't see it tomorrow, when are you seeing it again?
Probably next weekend sometime.
So you'd say there's a 50-50 chance that I'm going to go see Avengers 2 a second time before you see it the first time.
It's quite possible.
Because I'm seeing it again Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's quite possible.
You see, that's
yeah,
the
no, 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 no. You're 100% right. You're 100% right. In terms of story, I like what Snyder is doing with the DC because that resonates with me. Yeah. However, I'm going to give this to you. There's not a lot of rewatchability to it.
Yeah.
It's an epic story that I think is going to be really cool when it's told. But again, I'm like... and maybe I would have bought a second ticket if I had time, but again, it just didn't work out. I didn't go out to buy a second ticket. I have
another perfect example. Kevin Smith in Clerks 2 made fun of the trilogies.
The younger people view
the trilogy as something else. But I think we can both admit that they are very valid trilogies, right? They're good three movie things.
Yes.
Dan, what have you watched more, Star Wars or Lord of the Rings?
Star Wars.
Will, what have you watched more,
In my entire life, Star Wars.
The problem is that one of my favorite movies is?
What's that?
It's Lawrence of Arabia.
It's a great movie. Oh, yes, I knew that. It's a great
beautiful
movie.
It's beautiful.
I love that movie.
The beautiful 60mm and all the desert shots.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
wonderful. When was the last time I saw it?
I don't know.
3 years ago. Right? My favorite movie
I probably
of all
haven't
time
watched it about five
is
years.
Ukuru by Kurosawa.
It's a good movie.
It is. And Senji's awesome in it. I love it.
It's a great movie.
How many times have I watched it?
Twice? Three times?
Once.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
Downer movies can be very moving. But nobody goes, honey, I want to be cheered up. Let's watch Schindler's List.
That one's actually the like my wife's like, I've never seen that movie. And I'm like, yeah, that's one that you should probably see, but I'm not ever going to sit down and watch it with you, and you're never gonna go out of your way to watch it.
No one goes,
you
no
will
one
never
goes,
see that
it's
movie.
Time, you know what? It's time for our annual viewing of Saving Private Ryan.
Here's the thing, like,
yeah,
like,
no, I will never watch that movie again. I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, never
was
watch it again.
Jarring.
Although
and I can't
one
do
there's
it
only
again.
One exception to that rule. Shawshank Redemption. Is
at
the
least
one,
it works out.
It's a happy ending.
Yeah,
but
I think
the
that
movie's
makes
kind
it,
of
it's better
on a variety of levels. Right? Like you'll walk in and someone will be watching it and you're like you see carving in the wall and you're like without even realizing whether or not they've ever seen the movie, you go, oh, poor Brooks.
It's just, yeah.
Right?
Poor Brooks.
We do watch it again. Like, there are movies like that. Stand By Me, I think, is pretty much a downer.
Yeah,
but
it is.
I've watched it a bunch of times. But there's very few, like if you're especially for like franchise properties, your movie has to be, even if it's depressing, like for most of the movie, it has to have a happy outcome.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. If I want to be like my favorite movie is Almost Famous, but if I really want a good time, I'll watch Real Genius every time, and I can quote it, and it always makes me laugh.
Real Genius is a better movie than Almost Famous, and they're in the same category.
In what way?
Teenage male coming of age stories.
Yes, that's very true.
In fact, they're the exact same story when you get down to the fundamentals of the theme, because the band members are roughly the same age discrepancy as Val Kilmer's supposed to have over the Genius Kid and Real Genius. So, like, they're really the same movie, and I think Real Genius is probably a better version
of that. I love Real Genius. I love that movie.
But, yeah, no, I mean, like, that's DC's problem. I mean, if everything's so dour, it's why Batman is really dour, but it's repeat watchability. It's because
that's what's expected of Batman, right?
No, because Batman comes off almost like a cop, man, rather than a superhero. Batman suffers for our sins. Does that make sense?
Wow, that became Jesus-like.
Yeah, I got really, really deep. I don't think I'm really geek deep
no,
way.
In the Chris Nolan universe, that's a literal thing, right? In a lot of Batman, there's not that V moment, right, where you've got V talking into the camera in the movie.
Okay.
Where he goes, like, if you really want to see who's responsible, all you have to do is look in a mirror. Right? Nolan's Batman is full of that.
Yeah.
Right? This isn't like, oh, look, the mafia is so strong. This is like, you know how you kind of stopped asking the mafia to at least pretend like they're not criminals like 40 years ago? This is the world we get. Right? So, like, when you look at it from that standpoint, Batman is made to suffer. And we get kind of a catharsis by watching him suffer because we're not the ones suffering with
Batman
him,
right? Is Jesus.
I don't think any Christian out there is really going to be happy with you.
No, absolutely not.
Jesus is a catharsis. They actually think he literally died for our sins, Dan. Not that I need to tell you your religious beliefs, but you, Catholic boy, are supposed to be one of them. But yeah, no, I mean, like, that works. Superman, it doesn't work. First of all, I think the biggest problem we've had with Superman ever since the end of Superman 2 is that there's this like thing about Superman suffering. How can Superman suffer? I go back to Angus.
What do you mean?
Superman's a lot of things. He's brave.
Yeah.
He's decent. He's strong, actually, but he's not brave. Right? That's the point of Angus. That's what George C. Scott says. It's because you can't be brave unless you're afraid of something.
He's afraid of losing other people, but not for himself.
No, but when George C. Scott is having that speech in Angus, Dan, he's saying it as a guy who read Golden Age Superman stories, right? Like there is no depth of like we didn't get into the idea that Superman could be afraid of an outcome until like 1976.
I am listening, but I'm also listening to my son scream as my wife is doing something. Yeah. I'm assuming bathing him.
You know why? It's because she's got an early cut of Suicide Squad. She's showing.
That's it. All right. I'm going to cut it short because, again, all the rest of my topics suck. But I do have one question from the universe. It was for Dez about this Kickstarter project on the Titan series.
Titan series.
I don't know
series.
What that is.
Well, let me explain the Titan series to you, Dan. There's a company out there that hired some game designers, and they want you to give them $16 per game for 9 games.
They've got $109,000 of their $135,000 goal.
That just shows that people are stupid.
Well, why? Okay, I don't understand what this is. So this company's hired these game designers
to design games.
All right, that's what you do. You hire game designers to design games.
And they have on this listing, Dan, 9 games they're doing. More games possibly as stretch goals. But you don't get them. You just get the right to buy them. But that's not the problem. The real problem is they list the description of 3 of the games. The longest description is 2 sentences long. The shortest is 1 sentence long. They don't sound like good games. And the other 6 games, they give you no idea what those games are going to be.
So basically, here's one.
It's called a board gaming grab bag.
Paul Peterson is designing a game. His game is, this unique risk management game challenges players to carefully maneuver their dice from one side of the board to the other, where locations of different point values await. Players move and manage dice along passageways according to their roles, all while trying to stay on the best path. Event cards provide even more excitement by helping or hindering players' movement. Navigate the board, risk dice along the way, and gain victory points at the end of each round. The player with the most points wins.
Yeah, go to the other ones. Go to the Richard Garfield one.
Richard Garfield, how well can you link minds with your fellow players?
Oh, that's right. It's a party game.
This hilarious, thought-provoking party game invites players to think as one when responding to queries. Players receive points for responding the same way as other players, so it's categories. It's the anti-scategories.
Well, it doesn't matter what it is.
Regardless of whether or not the other players provide a correct response.
They're asking you to buy 9 games sight unseen.
Yeah.
Without any idea of what the games are. And of the list of the designers, I got to be honest, there's only one person on that list who hasn't made a stinker. And that's Eric Lang. And Eric Lang's made like 5 games.
I feel like the Richard Garfield game might be fun in a bigger, big enough group of people.
I don't think Richard Garfield has made a successful game since Magic. Or before Magic,
for that
matter.
Didn't he do King of Tokyo?
Yeah, he did King of Tokyo. I guess King of Tokyo.
It's not a bad game.
No, I like King of Tokyo, but he's designed a lot of games, Dan, since he did Magic the Gathering. Like something like 40. Did you just kill our recording?
No, we're recording, but I'm not plugged in anymore.
It's a miracle.
I don't know what's going on. It's recording. Everything's on. Okay. I don't know.
So here's my answer to this query. If the idea of a loot crate of board gaming appeals to you, I guess $16 a game isn't too much money. But I'd much rather spend $16 on a good game than $16 on a game that might or might not be good. So, like, my recommendation, go out and buy Council of Verona when it's reprinted in a month or a month and a half.
All right.
It's only $10.
Council of Verona, which we have to play tonight with the Poison expansion.
Yes, with the Poison expansion. So, yeah, I think, in general, Kickstarter has gone too far.
You've gone too far, Kickstarter.
Not Kickstarter, but the way people are using it. There's a lot of game companies now that are just using Kickstarter for pre-orders, effectively. Right? Like, I mean, they're companies that have been making games for 10 or 15
basically,
years.
Basically, we're going to put out this
product.
We're
not going to front the cost anymore. We're just going to sell to you direct.
Give us this money, and you're pre-ordering the game, and then we're going to design it and pay people, you know, if we get enough money.
Yeah. So when if EA goes on there and is like, hey, do you guys want to buy Madden 2016?
Yeah, basically, yeah, right now.
Give us $60, and next year we'll give you the game after we've made it.
And that's
Thank you for helping fund the game.
That's what Kickstarter has become.
Yes.
That's exactly. So it's a way to pre-sell game, or pre-sell anything.
Yes,
any product.
But just like Will's hypothetical EA response, it's having an effect on the entire system. Because what would happen, Will, if EA started direct selling their games? How long would GameStop survive?
Not long.
And what would happen the next time you wanted a stupid shooter game that you used to buy for $11 used at GameStop, and now you can only buy for $60 through a direct order system?
This is already a problem because, for example, right now, if I want to buy a game, I download it directly to my PlayStation.
Yeah.
I no longer buy physical games. So GameStop's already suffering.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but
here is my problem. So I
don't know how that I don't know why that works. That shouldn't work.
I just bought Arkham Origins. And I didn't know I was going to buy Arkham Origins. I'd always wanted the game, but I never got around to buying it. About a week and a half ago, PlayStation had a spring sale where Arkham Origins to download on my PS3 was $8.99. I missed it because I didn't actually buy it. So I ended up going to GameStop and buying the physical game for $17.99. But if I would have, I'm still going to play the game.
Yeah, but I got an important.
I could have downloaded it for half price.
I got an important question.
What's that?
When you buy a new game, what do they charge you?
I don't know.
60.
Okay, if it's a so brand let me, new let me, game, let, me yeah. see, let me see if I got this right. So someone has designed and built a game. They've cut the creation of the physical product and the middleman, the two most expensive steps out of that process.
Yeah, it still costs
and you're
$60
still paying them the same damn price.
That's a whole.
I won't do
that. That's a whole thing. Yeah. The fact that they're still charging the same price for a physical game as they are for a digital download.
They're only doing that on major releases for people who have just become accustomed and are going to pay damn
but that's
money.
Why, but that's
so a new Call of Duty comes out, you're going to give them the damn money if you're one of those people who plays that game.
It's the same reason that Marvel is doing worse in digital downloads than DC.
Because they're still charging the cover price?
Because DC acknowledges we never made a book. So if you want the book in the first month, you pay the full price. But if you're willing to wait 30 days, we'll charge you a dollar less.
Yeah.
Right? So DC acknowledges there's a big difference between the two products, between a physical comic book and a digital comic
book. I would rather you download my comic book or my game because I'm going to get more money out of it.
Yeah, but Marvel doesn't do that. Marvel charges the same price for all digital. And guess what? Most people who read digital for Marvel read it on Marvel Unlimited, where Marvel makes no money.
Yeah.
Right? All because Marvel won't admit that a digital comic costs you $2 less to produce than a real comic.
Oh, completely.
All you, I'm not asking for the full $2. I'll split the $2 with you, okay? But you got to give me some kind of break, or you're treating me like I'm a sucker.
Give me a reason to download your comic.
Yeah.
You incentivize Dez to download the comic as opposed to going to comics and stuff and buying it.
It's why I like companies like Alterna when they're starting off digital. They don't go, oh, you know, this is a 6-issue trade paperback. Most people charge $19.99 for a 6-issue trade paperback. You're a digital comic company, and no one knows about your product. They charge like $6.99.
Yeah.
Right? That's an appropriate cost. It's like $1.10 an issue.
All right.
Rant over.
That's all I got. Anything else? Dez's rant ended the podcast. It was brilliant. William, do you have anything? It was a good show last night, right?
It was a good show last night.
I enjoyed. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, no, I definitely did.
Apparently, the Decemberists were in San Diego last night. They were in Phoenix the night before. Totally different song set.
Really?
They got the full Crane Wife. We got Hazards of Love.
Oh, okay.
We got the full opening of Hazards of Love. Yeah. So, you know, and they're little, like Andy, my buddy Andy lives in Phoenix.
If I was a band, I would do the same thing. I would drive myself crazy playing the same songs.
Well, and the Decemberists are interesting because they don't have many hits. So if you're going to see them, you know all of their songs, and so they just change it up. They just change it up.
There's nothing you expect except Mariner's Revenge.
Yeah, exactly. We got Rainfall last year, record year for Rainfall last year. That one that you were like, I know, but you didn't really know it.
Yeah.
They didn't play that at Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Andy got some other song, and I'm like, you know what? And again, if I was a Decemberist, I could go, like, if we were going on vacation somewhere, they're like, on my honeymoon, they were randomly in San Francisco, and we were there. We didn't go see them, but if, like, we were randomly going up to San Francisco next or wherever they're at, it'd be a totally different show. Totally different show. It was a good show. It was a very good show. I'm very tired, but it was a very good show.
Definitely.
Do you have anything else for this podcast?
I do not.
Dez walked away. Everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of Musings of a Geek. Again, you can get us at the Musings of a Geek website on the Musings of a Geek podcast network. We are also found on Danger Entertainment, that podcast network. Also, Geek Life Radio and TuneIn Radio. So if you can get and iTunes, obviously, Stitcher, all that stuff. Everybody has left me, so I am now here to end this podcast on my own. If you were interested in anything we talked about, we do have an Amazon banner on musingsofageek.com, which is our podcast network website. Go ahead and jump on the Amazon banner, search for what you want, and give us a little bit of money. That would definitely help keep the lights on. Also, if you want some swag, we've got some swag. You can buy stuff. Jump on the link on there. It says Musings of a Geek stuff. You can go ahead and,
for the audience
and do that.
Dan Zisko has been recording to you live by himself for at least 2 minutes.
I'm closing the show, Desmond.
All alone. Forever alone!
I'm closing the show. Did you have anything else for this episode?
No.
All right. Listen to the rest of the podcasts on the Musings of a Geek podcast network. We've got tons of them. Some update
actually,
more than others.
I do have one thing.
Okay.
I'd like to give a big congratulations to the boys at Graphic Novice.
All right.
Who, in their 3-week quest to record a 60-minute episode...
I have a podcast I need to post for them.
...managed to record a 72-minute-long podcast.
That's really good for them. That is really good for them.
As you know, the last 10 minutes is maybe the funniest thing ever to happen on a podcast. Because as soon as they made it over the 60 mark, VF just decided to keep messing Nicole up intentionally.
So basically it was you.
For like 10 minutes.
VF is their you.
No, because I'm usually, usually when I interrupt you, I'm right.
Oh, fair enough.
VF was being like silly, like, you know, so it was like, you know, he would just like repeat things Nicole said. Or, I mean, like, it was real silly.
It was just being silly. So, also, if you like Sweating the Small Stuff, at some point soon, we're going to do episode 10 of Sweating the Small Stuff. We're going to actually do it on, like story theory, like rising action, climax, denouement, putting together a good script. We're going to do that.
How when you're really smart, like,
people
science reporter, and you think it's funny to say that NASA has invented a warp drive, you're always wrong.
Fair enough. All right, everybody, thanks again for listening, and stay geeky, my friends.
You are now leading the world of Musings of a Geek podcast network. Stay geeky, my friends.